Indian Lake. It's 8 o'clock. Good morning. This is Northern Light for Monday, August 15th. I'm Todd Moe. Monica Sandresky has the day off. Today is Sister Debbie Blow's last day as head of the North Country Mission of Hope for more than 20 years. The Champlain Valley organization has helped thousands in the region and around the world. She says today there are 13 people in Nicaragua keeping the mission's work there on track.
They have their pulse on the hands and the needs of the people, and we are assisting. We have all the ways that we can email and all the ways we can stay in touch daily. But they are doing it. They are now the vision of the mission. They are the faces of the mission.
More on the North Country Mission of Hope coming up. There's been a recent push to make the Adirondacks more accessible for people with disabilities, but disability advocates say the state is falling far short of making most of the park accessible for everyone.
The real trick to accessibility is to have it vetted by someone who knows the difference. If someone who uses a wheelchair or is familiar with the disability community goes in and verifies that it is accessible, that's a whole nother standard.
And our book reviewer Betsy Capus reviews Pig Years. It's all coming up on Northern Light. Stay tuned. Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by the Village Mercantile, Saranac Lake, partnering with local nonprofit organizations to sell their merchandise through their e-commerce store, villagemerc.com. And Apothecary Chocolates, making gourmet chocolates by hand from all-natural herbs, botanicals, and tree syrups, apothecarychocolates.com. This is Northern Light. I'm Todd Moe. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik voted no on the Inflation Reduction Act, which passed in the House of Representatives on Friday afternoon. The act contains the largest financial investment to fight climate change that the country has ever made, as well as measures to reduce health care costs. Before the vote, Adirondack Council Executive Director William Janeway said Stefanik should reconsider her decision. He told the Adirondack Daily Enterprise the bill is the biggest thing Congress has ever done to address climate change. Janeway said that Stefanik, quote, knows climate change is a real threat to her district, unquote. President Biden is expected to sign the bill into law soon. After more than 20 years leading a Champlain Valley-based nonprofit, today is Sister Debbie Blow's last day. During her time at the helm, the North Country Mission of Hope has helped thousands of people in Nicaragua and around the world, as well as here in the North Country. Kara Chapman brings us the first of two stories on the Mission of Hope.
The story of how the North Country Mission of Hope began dates back to 1998. Sister Debbie Blow was the campus minister at Seton Catholic, a high school in Plattsburgh. That October, a massive storm hit Central America.
It didn't stop raining for 3 days. It rained more than 75 inches, and that broke the rain gauges in the country. Nicaragua was being destroyed, and parts of Honduras and El Salvador as well.
Hurricane Mitch killed thousands of people and left thousands more missing. One of the places hit hardest was Chicalistagua, a village near the capital of Nicaragua. That's where two of Blow's students were from. After the hurricane, the student's mother, Jamilet Flores, and her friend Eve McGill flew down to Nicaragua. When they returned, McGill, Flores, and Blow got together. They decided to raise money for the community and eventually send a group down to help. Seton Catholic students, staff, and families brought in $3,000. Then they reached out to a local radio station and asked the greater Plattsburgh community to match it.
So we put the plea out over the radio, wiry, to match the $3,000. And a week later, we had $30,000. And as they say, their mission was born.
Fast forward to February. Blow and dozens of students and adults headed down to Nicaragua. The trip was only supposed to be a one-time thing. That is, until after a trip to a local orphanage. Blow was sitting on an old rickety bus next to a Seton Catholic student. She says he turned to her and asked if she knew what the greatest sin would be.
I said, no, what would the greatest sin be? And he looked right, looking me in the eye, and tears strolling down his face, and he said, if we never came back. that precise moment in my heart, I knew that we could not just do the one and done, what I call the one and done. You go, you bring some stuff, you drop some dollars, you make yourself feel better, but nothing systemically in the community ever changes.
After that trip, the mission shifted its focus to that systemic change. The organization formed a local council in Nicaragua to guide its long-term efforts. Blow says her vision was to empower those people, asking them directly what they would need to help stabilize their community.
So we focused on four main areas: education, healthcare, community development, and ecological sustainability. And in the process of focusing on those four things, we also immediately began a feeding program, although it was small at the beginning, and we began service to the orphanage.
More than 20 years and dozens of trips later, the Mission of Hope serves four orphanages in Nicaragua and one in Venezuela. The organization helps educate more than 800 kids each year and has built hundreds of home shelters, mostly in Nicaragua. They've also worked on things like water systems and medical facilities in that country. But the mission trips that brought North Country volunteers to Nicaragua have been on pause since 2018. First, socio-political tensions made the journey unsafe for volunteers, and the COVID-19 pandemic added health concerns to the mix. Still, the Mission of Hope's work in Nicaragua continues. Blow credits a staff of 13 on the ground with keeping the mission's efforts there on track.
Thank God they are running our programs. They have their pulse on the hands and the needs of the people, and we are assisting. But now we have Zoom and we have WhatsApp and we have all the ways that we can email and all the ways we can stay in touch daily. But they are doing it. They are now the vision of the mission. They are the faces of the mission.
Blow says she hopes the mission will one day resume its trips to Nicaragua. But for now, she knows its programs there are in good hands. Kara Chapman, North Country Public Radio, Plattsburgh.
Tomorrow morning, we'll hear more about the Mission of Hope's work here in the North Country and around the world, and Sister Debbie Blow's vision for its future as she steps down. There's been a recent push to make the Adirondacks more accessible for people with disabilities. The DEC says it plans to upgrade the popular Fish Creek campground, but disability advocates say the state is falling far short of making most of the park accessible for everyone. Jason Thurston is the chair of the state's Accessibility Advisory Committee and spoke recently with David Lombardo of the public radio program Capital Press Room. Thurston began by describing one park that is specifically designed for people with disabilities, the John Dillon Park in Long Lake.
We have 3.5 miles of accessible trails that are firm, stable, and with a maximum slope of 8%. We also have fire rings that are ADA compliant, which means that they are 9 inches off the ground in the middle, so they're easy to reach, but also enough room around the outside to tend a fire, as well as lean-tos with ramps into them, which makes them a lot easier, and sleeping platforms. This is something that I don't see the DEC acting on too much as far as the lean-tos go. But we definitely provide an opportunity for people that otherwise wouldn't be able to camp at the DEC campsites with tents.
As a quadriplegic yourself, what do you like to do in the park? And what's your experience been when you try to go out and take advantage of the resources that the park has to offer? Do you find that what's billed as accessible actually is? Or can there be some false advertising in some situations?
I really enjoy just cruising trails that go into the middle of the woods, which is something that can't be done just everywhere, you know, with roots and rocks and such things. I haven't figured out how to camp in a tent yet. That's something I have yet to figure out. But I definitely hope to get out more and make more things accessible. As far as false advertising goes, the real trick to accessibility is to have it vetted by someone who knows the difference, because someone can even go by the guidelines and say it's accessible, or other places are even just known to be eyeballing it and saying it's accessible. But if someone who uses a wheelchair or is familiar with the disability community goes in and verifies that it is accessible, that's a whole nother standard. And that's something that we're trying to work on with the committee, is making sure that the stuff that we do review is vetted so people can be confident that it's going to be accessible.
Yeah, I want to talk about the committee. What do you see as its role moving forward?
We just really kind of revived this last fall and gained a bunch of new members and are trying to make a three-prong approach to our efforts, in that we're trying to highlight the things that are accessible, because there's a lot out there that people just don't know about that's just waiting, as well as any kind of improvements on what the state's already working on, or also places that need to be made accessible. Now, that being said, that's a pretty daunting task in itself, but we have had an influence within the DEC. This year, we got a meeting with the commissioner and expressed all of our concerns and the need for more attention and funds to be put towards this, which he was very receptive of, as well as the newly appointed disability rights coordinator that was appointed by the governor, a new position.
Yeah, so a lot of what you're talking about in terms of recent progress, whether it's meeting with D.C. Commissioner Basil Sagos, reconvening the committee in earnest last fall, or the ascension of the state's new chief disability officer, Kimberly Hill, are all things that have happened on Kathy Hochul's watch as governor. Do you feel like there is a significant changing of the guard with the transition at the executive mansion, or do you feel like these types of things were already happening under the Cuomo administration, or were like already in the works? You know, how do you think about the change in Albany?
Well, I think accessibility overall has experienced a paradigm shift. I was first injured in 2004, and accessibility was not anywhere near as much on the radar as it is today, especially with the diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts to bring people on the fringe into mainstream society. And definitely, Kathy has had a big impact on raising awareness. When she appointed Kim Hill, she outlined that as far as employment and accessibility and transportation for people with disabilities, we can do a lot better in New York State.
Jason Thurston is chair of the state's Accessibility Advisor Committee and spoke recently with David Lombardo on the Capitol Press Room. Thurston, chair of the state's Accessibility Advisory Committee, and you'll find more at ncpr.org. Music by Dan Berggren and Boston Spa. You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8:14 on this Monday morning, the 15th of August. I'm Todd Moe. Northern Light is supported by Siegel Festival in Scroon Lake, bringing opera and musical theater to the Adirondack since 1915. More at siegelfestival.org. And Cornell Cooperative Extension of St. Lawrence County presenting the photography exhibit In Season, a rural food system in photos, exploring the stories of more than 80 North Country farm and food businesses. The display continues through October at the Tawney Center in Canton. And for more information, check out blogs.cornell.edu/fruition. Stay tuned. Coming up in just a few minutes, our book reviewer Betsy Capus reviews Vermont writer Ellen Gatto's new book called P pig years. It's been called a startling testimony to the glories and sorrows of raising and harvesting plants and animals. That review coming up in just a few minutes. Governor Kathy Hochul says gun safety laws passed after the Buffalo mass shooting that killed 10 people are reporting some success. From Albany, Karen DeWitt has more.
After the Buffalo supermarket shooting, where 10 African Americans died, Governor Hochul ordered the state police to automatically invoke the state's red flag laws and ask a judge for an order to temporarily seize the guns and other weapons of anyone that they think might be a threat to themselves or others. Hochul, speaking on Long Island, says in the 88 days since then, the issuance of the orders of protection have increased by 94%, with over 184 orders being issued over the past 3 months. That's double the number for this time period in 2021.
We're talking about connecting the dots before something happens. I want to be in the business of preventing crimes more so than trying to solve crimes.
The alleged Buffalo shooter threatened to commit a murder-suicide at his high school in 2021, and authorities were notified, but the red flag laws were never used. Since Hochul issued the order to the state police, the legislature passed a law requiring that all law enforcement agencies in New York invoke the red flag laws whenever they believe someone might be a threat. State Police Superintendent Kevin Bruin says it's harder to demonstrate when something doesn't happen than when it does, but he says he believes the stepped up orders have prevented serious injuries and even deaths.
It's not possible for me to tell you a specific case of something that didn't happen because we did this. But it really, I know in my heart of hearts, we have stopped specific tragedies from happening because we took action.
Hochul also announced that the state's Division of Criminal Justice Services will provide training for law enforcement agencies statewide so that they can learn how to better use the red flag laws. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Mackenzie's Grill, a popular restaurant in Saranac Lake, was destroyed in a fire last Thursday night. The Adirondack Daily Enterprise says it appears that no one was injured. The restaurant's roof collapsed during the blaze, which started shortly after 8 p.m. while the restaurant was closed. Saranac Lake volunteer firefighters were able to keep the fire contained to one building. The cause of the fire has not yet been determined. Listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Mell. Monica Sandresky has the day off. Coming up in just a moment, Betsy Capus reviews a new memoir called Pig Years by a Vermont writer. We've also got more of Morning Edition. That includes Bird Note. And the Weather Service says sunshine for much of the region today, partly cloudy in Glens Falls, Saratoga Springs, Lake George, but mostly sunny elsewhere, with highs today ranging from the mid-70s to low 80s, winds, light winds out of the east. Then tonight, lows dipping down into the 40s and 50s. Tomorrow and then Wednesday and Thursday, about a 30-40% chance of some scattered rain with highs in the 70s. And the Weather Service says partly cloudy skies Friday with highs in the mid to upper 70s. Right now in Canton, we've got sunshine and 61 degrees. Vermonter Ellen Gados writes of her joys and struggles as an itinerant farmer in upstate New York and Vermont. And our book reviewer, Betsy Capus, spoke with me about Ellen Gados' new memoir, Pig Years.
Todd, I have a big vegetable garden, but I don't try to make my living from growing vegetables. Gados writes about how difficult it is to make a year's worth of income with a short growing season in our area.
Okay, vegetables, but why is her book called Pig Years?
I know. Well, every year Gados buys a few piglets in the spring and raises them. She feeds them vegetable scraps and cafeteria leftovers. She loves pigs, even though they always seem to be escaping from their pens. And then in the fall, when they weigh hundreds of pounds, she and her friends butcher them and make sausage. She can sell the good cuts and still have plenty of meat to last her through the winter.
Yeah, so she loves the pigs, but she eats them.
Yep, that's life on the farm. Yeah. Here's Gatos after her friend Ethan has shot her pigs. It is ugly out on the snow with death exposed like this. I feel sick to my stomach. I don't help. I just stand watching. I think I should be here as the completion of the animal husbandry job. In looking, one sees something of oneself in the dying animal, a claustrophobic sense of mortality.
Whew, that's kind of brutal.
I know, and Gatos has plenty of brutal scenes in her book, but she also writes of the beautiful moments of the pigs' lives. Here are her words after a pig named Gumdrop has her first litter. When they are born, Gumdrop's babies are quite thin and look more simply animal than pig. They have the high hips of greyhounds and tails not yet curled that connote something rodent about them. Their hoofs and snouts have the infant elasticity of gummy bears.
Gumming bears. Yeah, I think that's a great description, actually.
Yeah, and that is the strength of this book. Yeah. Gatos pulls the reader in with her strong writing. Here she is writing about working on a farm in Barrie, Vermont. In the heart of summer, Diana, Lee, Sam, Bette, Chris, and I are dwarfed by the farm, the sheer life force of it, pulled by the demands of plants and animals, pressed like blunt objects into the ground, buried in the work we have wrought.
Why does she keep working as a farmhand if the work is so difficult?
I'll let her tell you. Here she is. It is skilled work, but it's not good money. Besides a fondness for the days, I like the concrete task of producing food, and my hands are trained by years of repetition at bunching radishes, trellising tomatoes, setting up fences.
So is her book entirely set on farms?
Lots of it is, yeah. And almost all the book is set during the summer season. But Gatos also details what it's like to live in the rural places where the farms are. The bars, the speedways.
The speedways? What does she mean by that?
She has a couple chapters on speedways, which was fun. In her chapter called The Eve of Destruction, which is the name of the demolition derby at the Lebanon Valley Speedway, she writes about the rowdy crowds and the crashes. Here she is. At the speedway, the violence is courted. At work, it is unexpected. Accidents happen. Hands are caught in balers. Welds land hot metal on skin. People are sucked into their machines, fall from ladders, flip in forklifts. Limbs are pinned beneath felled trees. Cows' hoofs collapse work boots. Here at the speedway, we build a pyre to the effigy of work, made in smashed machines and wrecked efficiency.
Yeah, so it sounds as though Gatos loves working on farms, but at the same time, she realizes the dangers and the frustrations of that work.
You got it. And in one chapter, at the end of one season, she and a friend get drunk, and they swear they will never work on a farm again. But even as she's swearing it, she knows she's lying, yeah. That she'll be back, planting seeds in the spring.
So, Bessie, I'm curious, who do you think would enjoy this book, you know, with all its kind of grittiness and you know, reality of farm work, death, destruction, those sorts of things?
Well, I got to say, Todd, it was a compelling read. Gatos doesn't sugarcoat anything in her memoir, and I appreciated her honesty. I also think many rural readers would understand why she keeps farming, that our connection to the land can't be measured by how much profit we make from it.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. Hey, thanks for your thoughts, Betsy.
It was my pleasure. See you next month.
Ellen Gatos' new memoir is called Pig Years, and our book reviewer Betsy Capus lives, reads, and writes in Colton. It's coming up on 8:25. You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio for this Monday morning. I'm Todd Moe. Monica has the day off, and thank you so much for joining us. Northern Light is supported by Thomas J. Lombombard, P.E. Keysville, providing engineering planning and environmental consulting services to Northern New York and Vermont, 518-834-7729. And Adirondack Health's Pain Management Clinic in Saranac Lake with Dr. Dwayne Dixon and Yasmin King, specializing in back, arthritic, and sciatic pain, migraine, and other chronic pain conditions. Learn more at AdirondackHealth.org. If you are here for the summer, to be honest, we depend on donations from friends like you, summer friends, summer listeners, to help keep critical news and information available throughout our region throughout the year. As the summer winds down, support your summer station with a donation at ncpr.org/give and collect an Only Here t-shirt. We've got a t-shirt, Only Here. Check it out. Make a gift. ncpr.org/give, and many thanks. I want to remind you that coming up this Saturday, the 20th, at the ADKX, the Adirondack Experience, the museum on Blue Mountain Lake, it's the Mushroom Mania Festival from 10 to 5. For some of us, they are a tasty delicacy. For others, something you're made to eat, love them or hate them. They're one of the most important organisms in our ecosystem, and you're going to learn a lot about fungi coming up Saturday from 10 to 5 at the Adirondack Experience. A couple of longtime experts on mushrooms will be there. Tim Baroni, who will be talking about Adirondack mushrooms, the good, the bad, and the beautiful, and also Susan Van Hook, capturing carbon in the soil sponge with fungi. She's been researching fungi for nearly 50 years. Also Tina Ellor, culinary and medicinal mushrooms. She was a Vermonter and is an expert on wild mushrooms. And those folks will be there. Also Bernie Carr, trees and fungi. How do they relate? So a lot going on in terms of mushrooms and what's going on underneath our feet in the soil on Saturday from 10 to 5. It's included with your admission to Adirondack Experience in Blue Mountain Lake. Should be a lot of fun and very interesting. Also, just a reminder, coming up on the 21st, Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock, you've got some great music coming to the Adirondacks. It'll be at Hill and Hollow Music in Saranac. They'll be performing, the band, the Will Patton Ensemble, will be performing Sunday at 4 o'clock at Weather Watch Farm in Saranac. Rain or shine, they'll be under a big tent. That's coming up Sunday afternoon, 4 o'clock. And here's just a sample of the Will Patton Ensemble, some of their music. The group is from Vermont. Ensemble from Vermont, led by renowned jazz mandolinist Will Patton. Their concert will feature Brazilian sambas and folk waltzes, jazz, taking you from, a front porch in Vermont to a Parisian bistro. It's all coming up on Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock at Weather Watch Farm in Saranac. Presented by Hill and Hollow Music. Check their website for more information. hillandhollow.com. Thanks for listening to Northern Light. I'm Todd Moe. Be well.